Chapter 3. If I can surround you with beautiful sounds, I will. If I can repay you for coming to save me, I will. If I can be who you want me to be, I will. If I can surround you, I will. I will. I will. Miracle Cure, Seawolf. 3. Luffy gets his way. No one is surprised. The crew accept their fate with varying degrees of resignation. Usopp's laughter is humorless as he sinks down onto the deck, but his face lights up when Franky presents the Mini Mary. The little boat cheers Usopp, Nami, and Chopper up. And not being long, they're giving it a whirl over the gloomy sea as though they never had any fears to begin with. Cute, Sanji says, clicking his lighter, but he's not talking about Nami's smile as the Mini Mary spins around and around and around. Franky shrugs, quirking a smile. What can I say? He laughs, a little embarrassed. Come on, Straw Hat, aren't we docking the Sunny? Yeah! Luffy cheers. Sanji nods along as though he's really agreeing. Where exactly? Anywhere! That's not how it works, Franky sighs, but he's already returning to the helm to fulfill his captain's wish. Are you going to wake Zoro-san? Robin asks, as the Sunny bobs towards the island. Luffy thinks about it for a moment, clamping his tongue between his teeth. Nah, he decides, patting the katana's hilt. He should sleep for a while. Do you think we'll find any treasure? I'll wake him up when we find something awesome. An island hidden amidst the Florian Triangle has a lot to offer, I'm sure, the archaeologist agrees, especially one that our newest Nakamad begged us to flee from. Normal people would listen to advice like that, Sanji adds, speaking around a mouthful of smoke. Luffy sticks his tongue out at him, and the cook mirrors the action. Normal's boring, the captain declares. Sanji's visible eye rolls, and then hides his fond expression behind another puff of his cigarette. I'll go prepare some lunch, then. Meat! Hollering at me only makes me want to serve you vegetables, moron. Let me go! The cook exclaims, attempting to untangle himself from the rubbery limbs. Luffy pouts and presses his cheek to the cook's shoulder. Meat? He asks softly, and Sanji scoffs. Say the magic words. Wide eyes blink at the cook's darkening scowl. Captain's orders? Sanji kicks him overboard. Thriller Bark is home to some bizarre beings, as they soon discover. The party of four dilly-dallying in the wake of the path left by their missing Nakama. Truly, Luffy isn't worried about his lost crew. Nami, Usopp, and Chopper are smart enough to protect themselves, and so he takes the time to appreciate the twilight scenery. The graveyard, the spindly trees and sodden ground, an island abandoned to mud, carcasses, and bone. This place is great, Luffy exclaims, holding the severed head of a walking, talking, quite shamelessly screaming corpse. Unfazed, the captain laughs his signature laugh, flourishing his undead captive for his crew to see. Look at his teeth! Man, isn't this awesome? He does appear to be showing quite a substantial level of decay, Robin comments, equally unbothered by the bespattering of body parts and gore about them. To the zombies' credit, they're already piecing themselves back together, although there does seem to be some confusion as to which limbs belong to whom, if the occasional grunts and wails are anything to go by. Luffy is happy to leave them be. They did admit to scaring their missing Nakama, after all. Oi, Luffy, if you don't shut that one up, I'll do it. Sanji grumbles, slumping into his battle-ready slouch. He lights a cigarette, unconcerned, and taps the ashes away, a scornful smile flashing across his expression as the half-zombie beneath him splutters and coughs. Luffy pouts, chin wobbling as he deliberates, the screaming head in his hands. "Hey, tell me where my Nakama went," he demands, pressing his face so close to scrutinize the zombie that his nose squishes the rotten nostrils before him.
Why would I do that?"
the head asks, and Sanji whirls around and kicks it right out of Luffy's grasp. Across the graveyard it bounces, shrieking all the while, and what's left of the other zombies unanimously point in the direction of the far gate, lips and tongues spluttering in terror.
"That way, huh?"
Luffy says, bounding off to explore without so much as batting an eyelash at his cook's unforgiving behavior. Said cook glowers at the remaining zombies before dutifully following along behind.
"See, that wasn't so hard, was it?"
he asks. The zombies squeal, and Frankie heaves a sigh.
"There's never a moment of peace with you lot, is there?"
the shipwright asks.
"Our captain would consider that boring," Robin explains.
Beyond the graveyard, they encounter a corpse of a man carrying only a light, his face ashen, bruised and gray. He stumbles along without a shadow at his heels, and Luffy oohs and ahs as the stranger proclaims his dilemma, accounting his misfortune to a man named Gecko Moria. He explains, with a trembling tone, that Thriller Bark is a ship, the largest that there has ever been. And when Luffy's eyes gleam in the lantern glow, he warns them not to continue, begs them not to go.
"What sort of pirate would I be if I didn't?"
Luffy asks, sniggering fearlessly at the mansion hiding within the gloom. Its towers and cold steel gates, like giants and monsters waiting patiently to inflict Moria's doom.
"A smart one?" Sanji asks.
"Definitely not a dead one," Frankie adds.
Deciding that his crewmates are simply wrong, Luffy adjusts his hat, pats the hilt of Zoro's blade, and marches up the mansion stairs. The wailing monotones of the shadowless man ring out behind him, so Luffy offers the man a cheery wave as the great creaking doors of the house quake and lock behind them.
"That was reassuring,"
Robin notes, unflappable and sincere. Luffy laughs, loud and carefree in spite of the sinister shadows of the house, the dark corners, the creeping lights, and the way the walls watch his every move. And he continues to laugh until only he of his crew remain unhounded, unchased, and until he stares at the smile of the Shichibukai, himself, his razor teeth, horns, and the stitches holding together the ghostly flaps of his skin. Where his crew have been taken, he has no idea, the puppets of this macabre mansion having picked them off one by one. But if there is anything that Luffy can be sure of, it is that he will be the Pirate King, and nobody, not even Moria, will stop him. Granted, clanking around in a golden suit of armor within a tiny, rat-worthy cage seems to put Luffy at the disadvantage here, but it is Moria who lazes around and orders others to do his dirty work for him, and it is Moria who underestimates the will of his opponent. The will of D.
"I am going to be the Pirate King!" Luffy bellows at his captors, smushing his helmet up against the cage bars. "Give me back my Nakama!"
Moria sighs, shadowed eyes at him, the taut, white skin of his mouth tugged into a frown.
"I'm not interested in your crew," he claims,
too lazy to even wave a dismissive hand. "Let them run around for all I care."
"Three of them are missing, and amongst them is my bride," the lion-muzzled man explains, unable to prevent a growl at this apparent tragedy.
Luffy doesn't know which of his Nakama the man is talking about, but he can't imagine Robin in a wedding dress, or Nami willingly wearing one. But maybe the lion man directs his preferences elsewhere?
"Got away from you, did she?"
chimes the girl with bubblegum pink hair, twirling her umbrella around as though spinning away the rain.
She laughs gleefully, batting thick eyelashes at the enraged snarl from the groom.
She's my bride!
She won't do as you ask, the blonde woman says, face an apathetic mask, even as the man continues to splutter and growl.
Who said anything about asking?
A particularly Nami-like squawk of outrage peeps up from the otherwise silent bear in the room, and Luffy blinks from behind the cumbersome helmet visor as the enlarged soft toy stuffs a paw into his mouth. Moria's weird lackeys continue to bicker, much to the Shichibukai's exasperation. So Luffy turns his eyes to the cage, pondering how best to escape his confinement.
Hey, Zoro! Zoro, wake up!
He whispers, wiggling so that the sword stuck to his side knocks against the cage. Only the squishy bear looks his way, eyes wide and frantic. The other occupants too preoccupied with throwing accusations at one another to notice the sound. Luffy ignores it, rolling about some more, and then huffs out a breath of frustration as a suit of armor clangs about him, digging into all his uncomfortable places. Maybe putting it on simply because it looks cool had been a bad idea.
Zoro!
The captain says more firmly, risking a glance at Moria as the colossal man heaves a sigh, growing bored with his subordinates.
I need you to wake up now!
A yawn rings out from the Wado Ichimonji, sleepy mumbling soon following.
I'm up. Sheesh, what are you... What's with the shiny getup? Why are we in a cage?
Despite himself, Luffy grins into the golden helmet.
I got caught.
Got what?
The spirit replies, alarm increasing as consciousness returns.
Is this Thriller Bark?
Zoro was really sleeping then?
Guess so. What the hell's going on? Where's everybody else?
We need to go find them, Luffy says, urgency encouraging him not to waste time explaining everything for now. Although he's sure that Thriller Bark's eccentricity will amuse the first mate. Luffy can fill Zoro in with the details later. When they're searching for the crew once again.
Do you think you could get us out of here? This gloopy stuff's really sticky.
Eh? Oh, well. The lightning will draw a lot of attention, but... Guess you can't draw Wado Ichimonji, huh?
Zoro is correct on both accounts, but that hadn't been what Luffy was implying.
But what about you?
He presses, glancing back through the cage to where the argument is beginning to die away. Moria appears to have found a distraction with a pick between his teeth, but it won't be long before he tires of listening to his underling squabble.
Zoro could materialize himself,
Luffy clarifies, thinking back to Brook, the Sunny, and the progress that Zoro had made.
And he could cut through the bars real easy, because he said he's a swordsman, right? And the Wado Ichimonji is his sword, so...
He knows it's a little unfair to dump so much pressure on the spirit. But apart from chewing his way out of the cell, Luffy doesn't know how else to escape this predicament. Usually, he wouldn't worry, assured both in his Nakama's strength and that they'll come and break him out. But Thriller Bark is Moria's domain, and Moria is not a man that Luffy wants his Nakama to cross, more than they already have. Finding his Nakama safe and sound is his topmost priority, Brook included, Bone and Shadow both. And Zoro will understand that. Zoro's resolve will resonate with that.
Aye, Captain,
his first mate says, conceding to the request after a moment's deliberation.
I'll try.
Luffy snickers into the plates of gold, sensing rather than perceiving the sword spirit considering his next action.
You called me Captain,
he says, wonderstruck by the way the title rolled from Zoro's tongue.
I'll call you thick-headed in a minute if you don't pipe down.
Zoro's embarrassed.
Shut up, you idiot. Do you want them to hear you?
Zoro's embarrassed,
Luffy repeats, this time barely whispering the words. He has to clack his jaw together to prevent a snigger at the spirit's maddened sigh.
Not fast enough, it seems, as Moria rolls his bulbous body over and narrows his beady eyes at Luffy's crimson face. Is this guy really worth 300 million belly? The umbrella-wielding girl cries, following the Shichibukai's gaze. I'm sure a negative hollow or two will wipe that smile from his face. Full of yourself, aren't you? The lion man snaps, ducking away when the girl jabs her umbrella at him. At least I know how to get what I want and keep it, moron. Oh, dear. The last occupant of the room mutters, a squat man with tiny black spectacles and a cascading mane of plum hair. He slaps a hand over his face, as equally displeased with the bickering as their master, it seems. And Luffy nudges Wado Ichimonji as Moria finally rises from his chair. The blade glows within its sheath, opal light pouring into the cage. Luffy winces, unable to stare at the moonlight flare, and glances away just as the katana crackles, spits, and burns the gloopy substance binding the captain's arms, sizzling in the heat.
Fuck!
Zoro curses, his voice resounding out loud and distant.
Why is this so goddamn difficult?
Luffy wiggles, realizing the bindings are beginning to melt and slip away. Keep going! He urges, tugging an elbow free as the commotion prompts the squawks and swearing from the captors. It's working!
No, it's fucking not!
No! It's hot! It's burning away the... Wado Ichimonji ceases emitting light instantly, leaving the captain blinking dazed spots of afterimages from his eyes.
You're wearing a metal suit of armor!
Zoro hisses, his concern providing an ample explanation as to why Luffy's skin is blistering, scorching, and raw. Don't worry about it, just... Moria reaches into the cage, and the Wado Ichimonji flares out, swallowing the cell in an inferno of light. The Shichibukai retreats, astonishment morphing his lax expression into a pale-faced surprise. And Luffy hurls himself out of the cage, rubber body clumsy within the sweltering suit. Catch him! Luffy yelps, tumbling past the enraged Shichibukai. The underlings snap to attention immediately, their argument postponed as they scramble to complete the order. The lion man lunges, claws and fangs nicking Luffy's vambrace as the captain dives out of the way, and the pink-haired girl shrieks a laugh as the growling gloom catapults away. Do I have to do everything around here? The bespectacled man bemoans. But even so, he doesn't so much as lift a finger as his comrades rush to catch the captain, the pink-haired girl summoning ghosts that cackle with childish glee.
The hell is this place? Why is everyone stitched together?
They're making an army of shadow zombies! Luffy pants, desperately trying to outrun the gaggle of ghouls. Cool, right?
You couldn't have woken me earlier?
Luffy laughs, helmet clanging free as he dive bombs out of the lion man's second attempt at subduing him. And then, quite promptly, trips over said helmet and crashes to the ground, one of the ghosts zooming over his head. This time, the overgrown stuffed teddy bear makes a sound suspiciously like Usopp's squawk of terror. Yet the warning comes too late, despair decimating Luffy's self-esteem as another ghost passes through him, its wispy body leaving a trail of self-hatred and agony behind.
Oi, Luffy?
Leave me, the captain moans, curling up into a ball on the floor. Despite Zoro's bellowing bemusement, he cannot bring himself to flee his fate. Assured that accepting his demise at Moria's hand is the only way he'll ever escape this worthless life he has built. When I'm reborn, Luffy cries, feeling death's cold hands looming over him, his shadow like Moria's, his laughter as cruel as Enel's, and Wapol and crocodiles before. I should be an anemone. Moria snatches him up in his gigantic grasp, and Luffy cannot bring himself to struggle. Laughing a wailing laugh, the Shichibukai flourishes his despondent prize and orders more rope to be brought. And distantly, as though Luffy's will is screaming from far away, There is a ringing noise in the captain's ears. Thunder and fury.
Back off!
The Wado Ichimonji burns again. Only this time the light sets the world aflame. White hot fire so bright that it sears reality, shape and shadow away. An incandescent shield against Moria's devilish desires. What is a blade, if not a very sharp shield? Moria seems interested now. Luffy squawks as he's dropped, red-hot rubber skin flaring as the golden armor clatters about him. He really shouldn't have put it on. For a moment, he is blind in the wake of Wado Ichimonji's light, aware of nothing but the scalding of the armor, his body on fire. But then Moria lunges and Luffy snaps up, peeling pieces of the suit away as he flees. A plate smashes into his face, from where he can't tell, but the throw aims true. But the absurdity of the weapon distracts him for long enough so that the Lion Man's final strike hits home, flattening the captain to the ground. At Moria's request, he wrenches Wado Ichimonji from Luffy's side, and Luffy growls, scrabbling for possession over the katana. Hey, hey, let him go! Give him back! Him? Moria asks, snatching the blade from the squabbling pair. The break in connection cuts off Zoro's yell for Luffy, but the Shichibukai gives no indication that he can hear the spirit as he waddles back to his chair. So there is something in here, Moria muses, watching the katanas spit lightning white and blue. He seems unfazed by the pain, if he feels any, laughing at Zoro's attempts to break free. String up the captain, he orders, slouching back into his seat. Wado Ichimonji appears bizarrely small in his grasp, but there is nothing Luffy can do as Moria's lackeys rebind him in rope. Let's see how you fare without your sword at your side. Turn on the light. I want to see the shadow this blade is hiding. A switch clangs, light bulbs sizzle, and Moria gives a rumbling belly drum laugh as light floods the room, stretching shadows out across the floor. Luffy roars, outraged, and a great pair of scissors swing down to cut. He lurches into awakening, rubber limbs flying wild as he flails upright, cracks his head against the ceiling, and then tumbles from the hammock and onto the Sunny's wooden floor. This violent awakening scares the reindeer dozing on the sofa into leaping a foot into the air, which results in both devil fruit users screaming at each other until they realize where they are. Eh? Chopper? How did I get here? Where's my hat? Where's Zoro? There were pegs involved, Usopp says from the doorway, arms crossed and a worried expression frowning darkly from beneath his feathered hat. Behind him, Franky, Robin, and Sanji are crowded out on the deck, their heads just visible as a mass of color and shape behind the sniper's rather dashing attire. Pegs? Luffy echoes, spying both his beloved hat and the Wado Ichimonji settled safely on the sofa beside Chopper. In one gallant leap, he springs across the quarters and flops down by the doctor, grinning when the little reindeer squeals. Zoro's not responding to anything, Chopper worries, eyes big and concerned as Luffy scoops up the scabbard. I think he might still be asleep. You and Sanji have had your shadows taken, too. Luffy blinks and spots that, yeah, he does not appear to cast a shadow in the low light of the room. Sanji, squeezing past Usopp and striding into the quarters, reveals that he, too, has lost the darkness at his feet. Although the concept is not a new one. Brook's shadow, after all, had been stolen long ago. Luffy finds it strange not to see something as ordinary and unnoticeable as his own shadow. I can't do anything, Chopper whimpers, ears drooping as the captain explores his now shadowless motions, swinging his legs from the sofa. I'm sorry. It's not Chopper's fault, Luffy says, rubbing a gentle hand through the doctor's fur. Is everyone else okay? There's a round of confirmations from the crew, which Usopp's quickly followed with. But Nami's been kidnapped, and then scratches his Pinocchio nose. Sanji almost hits the roof. Kidnapped? The sniper squeaks, making a pacifying motion with his hands, as though that could ever be enough to quell Sanji's fire. It's a valiant attempt, and one that only Usopp ever seems brave enough to make. And Luffy can't help but laugh at the misfortune of whoever has kidnapped his navigator. Nami's probably bludgeoning them by now. Oh, Usopp adds weakly, watching the flames of Sanji's fury flicker around him. Most of our food is gone? What? Says Sanji. But I'm sure we can restock soon. Despair douses the cook's inferno. Please tell me that's not a question, he says, already halfway out the door. Usopp says. And though he says nothing else, Sanji wouldn't hear him anyway, marching off across the deck to inspect the damage to their supplies. Food is probably the least of our concerns now, Franky says, notably once Sanji has moved beyond hearing range. Usopp bro's right. We can always restock later, once everyone's back together and you've got your shadows back. Ow! Perhaps a plan of action should be discussed? Robin suggests, conceding to the cyborg's point. Our priorities lie with... Nami! Luffy bellows, throwing his arms up in the air. Meat! We need to find your shadows, too, Usopp adds, gaze shifting uneasily to Luffy's shadowless feet. And the skeletons, says Franky. And Zoro's, Luffy announces, recalling the simple snip of Moria's oversized scissors, blade snapping relentless against blade. He doesn't know how to reunite body and shadow. Would glue be enough, he wonders? But they can worry about that once they find the corpses that Moria has stuffed with the darkest reflection of their personalities. Eh? Zoro had his shadow taken? Chopper squeals, climbing over Luffy's lap to reinspect the blade with his newly acquired knowledge. That must be why he's so quiet. He is still asleep. He woke up for a bit, the captain says, compelled to defend Zoro's honor, as the doctor attempts to rouse the spirit. Hey, Zoro, he adds, then louder with uncertain whisperings of the Zoan. Chopper wants to give you a checkup.
Don't wake me for that,
the first mate groans, and Chopper squawks, overhearing the exchange with a hoof against the blade. I heard that!
Whoops. Sorry, Chopper. You're the best doctor, really. I like spending time with you.
Even checkups, huh? Luffy says, laughing as Chopper gushes over the katana, muttering profanities at them both. Zoro makes an indistinguishable sound, deciding not to grace that with an answer. Once the doctor is temporarily satisfied with his Nakama's health, and Robin has coerced Sanji from his furious brooding in the pantry, the crew disembark to tackle Thriller Bark once again, with orders to keep their eyes peeled to chase and snag any of the four missing shadows. I believe the shadow of our musician inhabits the body of a swordsman, Robin explains, and Usopp snorts, adding with a grin, yeah, and Sanji's is in a penguin. The Straw Hat Pirates diverge, their goals as one, but their paths leading them apart. Luffy charges to Moria, eyes ablaze as though the Wado Ichimonji at his side has alighted his soul in flame. Finding his and Zoro's wayward shadows would be cool. Fun, even, a wild goose chase to never forget. But the dawn is against them, death approaching with a scythe of golden hues, his cloak the lingering chill of night, warming peach pink and plum in the morn. Moria's demise has a time limit, and Luffy can hear the hourglass trickle as he ascends to the castle, flip-flops flapping up the stairs. Hey, Moria! Luffy hollers, slamming open doors and blazing through passageways as he storms the mansion. Wado Ichimonji bounces against his legs, sparking with the same need to avenge what they have lost. Moria! The captain continues, blitzing through the east wing.
Mosaic windows reveal the gluttonous gray of the sky outside, the towers of the West Wing, and the courtyard and rubble below. But Luffy pays no mind to the gigantic figure in the distance, aware only that it is not Moria, and thus not important.
Where are you? Oi, Moria, I'm gonna be the Pirate King and I'm gonna kick—
Get down!
Brick and mortar implode into the hallway. Windows shatter, screaming a hail of glass and knives over the captain. He yelps, flattening himself to the carpet as a monstrous arm crashes through the wall. Hand, elbow, and thick, stitched-up skin and all. Humongous fingernails scrabble against the floor, tearing up concrete and carpet as the body catches itself. Luffy rolls over, clinging to his hat, and spies a huge, bulbous eye and a grisly set of teeth through the ruins of the wall before the giant retreats, dragging its colossal body back through the infrastructure with a deafening howl.
Meat!
You've got to be joking,
Zoro says, exclamation muffled by the sound of Luffy's shrieking laughter.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? That's my shadow! He's got my shadow!
Brushing brick and blood from his jacket, the captain scrambles over to what's left of the wall. The courtyard below is fully visible now, one of the bridges and towers utterly destroyed, and standing in the middle of all the destruction is a beast of a man, horned and snarling and personified, there is no doubt, by Luffy's joyous shadow.
Hey, look!
The rubber man cries, pointing to a black and blonde blur in the rubble. You can see Sanji from here. Oi, Sanji!
He's not gonna hear you, idiot.
The spirit sighs. Wado Ichimonji clattering against Luffy's thigh as the captain bounces up and down, arms flailing. Another explosion rocks the mansion as the giant swings for the light-footed cook. And screaming rises up from the courtyard in Usopp and Chopper's wailing tones.
Looks like the smarmy, curly-browed bastard's taking a beating. You think?
They'll be fine,
Luffy assures, grinning despite the struggle the crew below are going through, picking themselves up from the wreckage with curses and shouts of anger.
Robin and Frankie are down there, too, and I trust my Nakama.
All right,
Zoro says, an easy agreement, trusting his captain, trusting in his crew.
We better find Moria before this all goes to shit, though. That guy's...
A figure moves in the corner of Luffy's eye, scurrying past with a wobbling pace, cloaked in darkness and smiling with a familiar, sinister grin. Luffy bolts after him, yelling Moria's name as he goes. It's not Moria, as it turns out. But he only discovers this deep in the forest behind the mansion when he finally succeeds in capturing the wriggling Moria-shaped shadow and pinning it to the ground. Rather, it is in fact a decoy, and Luffy roars, outraged and humiliated, as the shadow quirks its razor mouth and scampers away, leaving the captain heaving in the dirt. He vows to clobber the Shichibukai at the first possible opportunity. Then he picks himself up, dusts himself down, and blinks, disorientated through the looming gloom of the trees.
Eh? Where are we?
He asks out loud, whirling around within the wooded labyrinth for any sight of the castle. The shadow must have led him further than he thought, and Luffy scowls as he plonks his hat onto his hair, realizing that he's been played. You're at the top end of the ship. A voice drifting through the fog informs him, and Luffy startles as a broad-shouldered, hulking zombie of a man approaches from the trees. His decay is substantial, Hogback's handiwork stitching up almost every inch of his torso and arms, and one single eye rolls loosely towards the captain as Luffy slips into a defensive stance.
Ships don't have a top end, mister,
Luffy counters, brow furrowing as the zombie lingers in the tree line, scarred hands picking at the stitches on his arm. Judging the zombie to be less of a threat and more of an entirely harmless Samaritan, Luffy relaxes a little. The Wado Ichimonji flickers uneasily, so Luffy pats it, sure that this zombie won't cause them any trouble.
Do you know how to get back to the mansion? I need to beat Moria up.
You'll have to go back down, the zombie replies, pointing behind the captain. Shouldn't take long if you keep to the path.
Luffy doesn't recall seeing a path anywhere in the forest, and he goes to query the reliability of the stranger's directions. Only in the next moment, half a dozen men burst out of the trees and dogpile onto the wandering zombie.
Hey, grab him! Quick! I've got him! Oi! Finally! Who'd have thought one goddamn shadow could cause so much trouble, eh?
Luffy blinks and cocks his head as the men, very much alive and boisterous men, clamber over the flattened zombie and cheer their success, unaware of the captain's presence. Stunned by this turn of events, he stands there, watching them until their squabbling dies away, six heads lifting to stare, gobsmacked at the straw-headed pirate.
"Who are you?" Luffy asks,
and the men scream.
"Another one! Where'd he come from? What did we do?
Wait, is he wearing a straw hat?"
Beneath them, the zombie grumbles a protest into the dirt, but one of the men brandishes a bag marked SALT and bonks the zombie with it.
"Ah, shush, we will use this, you know," he threatens. Interestingly, he doesn't immediately empty the bag onto the zombie's head, and Luffy can only wonder what has induced this strange behavior.
"I'm Luffy. Do you guys know how to get back to the mansion? I'm gonna kick Moria's butt for stealing my crew's shadows."
"The mansion? Yeah, it's that way," one of the men pipes up, pointing in the direction opposite to the zombie's instructions. The strange group of people seem to relax at the question, deciding something between them as their captive struggles underneath them.
"You're not a zombie?"
Luffy shakes his head, wondering which direction he should believe.
"Nuh-uh, I'm a pirate. You are sitting on a zombie, though. Why are you sitting on him? Has he got your shadow?"
That would be the logical assumption, except the men shake their heads.
"Don't think so," one of them says. "This one's kind of weird. He was wandering around earlier with no clue as to where he was."
"Directionally hopeless," another supplies, and the zombie protests again. "And he kept asking all of these questions about where he was and what was going on and looking all confused. You'd think he'd never seen a forest before or something," the first man continues, shrugging helplessly. "Total weirdo."
"We ran out of salt earlier, so we couldn't purify him. So we were gonna, tie him up and stuff. But the captain said we shouldn't, because that's not fair," says a third man.
"She said it's a bit cruel, isn't it, to kick a man while he's down?"
"You're sitting on him," Luffy reminds him. But he concedes the point, deciding that he likes this captain, whoever she is.
"Yeah, well, he keeps getting lost."
"It's like having a 6-foot puppy," says another, and the men laugh together as they finally clamber off the zombie.
Zoro, for some unfathomable reason, groans, and the zombie echoes him in almost perfect synchrony, grumbling and cursing as he climbs to his feet. Luffy's grin is unbidden, but wicked all the same.
"Don't say anything,"
Zoro warns, voice low with threat and undeniable embarrassment.
"And don't laugh, for God's sake."
Feeling generous as he watches the zombie with Zoro's shadow blink with a bewildered gaze, Luffy smacks a hand over his mouth to muffle a snicker. The group of men continue to chatter between themselves, one of them latched onto the zombie's shirt, as though worried he will lose his way while stationary, and Luffy has to tear his eyes away from the absurdity of the scene before amusement overtakes him once again. The aforementioned captain turns out to be a rather bruised and battered woman called Lola, whose hair nearly matches the bubblegum pink shade of the girl from the mansion. A disproportionately large mouth quirks as she smiles, dark red lipstick stretching across her face, and she introduces herself and her crew, the Rolling Pirates, further victims to Moria's plot, before inquiring after Luffy with open curiosity. After asking him to marry her, which, according to the crew, seems to be the norm.
"I'm gonna be the Pirate King," is his automatic reply, "and I'm gonna beat Moria's arse."
Lola's face lights up extraordinarily so for someone whose marriage proposal was just brutally rejected. "Well then, I just might be able to help you there," she says, winking one of her tiny eyes at him. "We know all of the secrets of Mordia's power." "Eh?" Luffy squawks. "You do?"
"They do?"
Zoro echoes skeptically. "They do, as a matter of fact." And though their explanation seems far-fetched, Luffy still plays along as they bicker over which shadow they should shove into him first. The rolling pirates have become apt shadow hunters, it seems. Although Luffy is sure there is at least one shadow that hadn't required much skill capturing. "Can you purify that one?" he asks, interrupting the argument with a determined gesture, pointing towards Zoro's dozy zombie. "It belongs to my swordsman." "A swordsman?" the rolling pirates exclaim, squinting at the zombie dubiously. "Are you sure?"
"Fuckers."
Luffy laughs and nods, his enthusiasm swaying the skeptical pirates. They shrug, saying, "If you're sure," and then dump a bag of salt over the zombie's head, in the easiest purification they have probably ever seen. Body and shadow separating immediately, the corpse collapses into the earth, and the rolling pirates jump up and snatch the shadow as it flails around in shock. Consistent with Brooke's vague description, the inky form assumes the shape of a young man with a well-defined physique, broad shoulders, and taller than Luffy, with what appears to be a short mop of scruffy hair. The captain beams as he tugs Wado Ichimonji from his belt, holding it out to reunite. The pirates hurl Zoro's shadow into Luffy instead, and both captain and first mate yelp. "Why'd you do that?" Luffy bellows, cracking Wado Ichimonji's scabbard against the head of the nearest man. "It belongs to Zoro!" The other crew blink at him, the injured man with tears in his eyes. "Well, your swordsman ain't here right now, is he?" one of them argues, eyeing the white katana nervously. "He won't mind you using his shadow for a bit, right?"
"Go ahead."
"Well, I don't have a choice now," Luffy whines, hating that the spirit's acquiescence has come after the choice has been taken from them. Zoro's reluctance to argue in fear of, well, what? Luffy isn't sure yet. Silence, disregard, abandonment is an issue. It is something the captain has noticed recently. Something he is desperate to change. But I guess if Zoro says it's okay...
"Stop whining and start kicking Mordia's arse."
Luffy nods, fist bumping the sky. "All right," he cheers, much to the rolling pirate's relief. "Hey, hey, how's this work anyway? What should I do?"
"How about you use that sword of yours?"
"Eh?" Rubber hands descend slowly, the captain almost frozen in his stupor. Luffy blinks at the suggestion, and then blinks at the katana, running elasticated fingers along the sheath. He grips the end in preparation to draw, but hesitates as he recalls his lack of training. He doesn't draw Wado Ichimonji often, but when he does, he definitely wields it like a stick, rather than the weapon it deserves to be. He unsheathes it. The Wado Ichimonji clinks from its scabbard with a confident grasp, the blade slicing an elegant swoop through the air. Luffy's body moves with emotion, executing a sequence of actions so well-loved and rehearsed that he doesn't even think about it. The katana striking again and again, steel a silvery blur. The rolling pirates ooh on cue, eyes goggling at the display of skill. And Luffy feels a surge of pride as he slides the katana into its sheath, hand lingering on the hilt.
"Well, that was weird."
Luffy has to agree. His actions had not been his own, his will controlled by an instinct that he's never had. It feels wrong to take advantage of Zoro's experience, the years of training, blood, bruises, and sweat. But at the same time, he cannot help himself. Zoro's shadow, like a soul, burning so fiercely within him that to ignore it is impossible. His hand remains on Wado Ichimonji, clutching the blade as though his skin has never felt the grooves in the hilt, the polished guard, or the sleek sheath before, has never held it, wielded it before. Luffy has, of course he has, But it is sorrow that he feels as he stares at that blade, and he realizes that it can't be his own, as the grief consumes him, the loneliness, the regret, the sickening, roiling guilt. "Give me some more shadows," Luffy demands. "I shouldn't be privy to this," he thinks, wrenching his hand away. He clenches his fist, dissuading himself from reaching for the katana again, and tries to will the emotions, his first mate's emotions, away.
"Luffy?"
"Hey, you heard the man," Lola calls, crew snapping to attention around her. "Let's put those shadows to use. How many do you think you can handle?" Luffy thinks of Moria, of the warning from the graveyard man, his Nakama, Brooke, and Zoro's mournful shadow, and lifts his eyes to meet the other captains, gaze dark and determined from beneath his hat. "Give me all of them." Luffy fights with a ferocity worthy of the 100 nightmares he contains. Moria plummets down into defeat, and when the sun comes up, it rises with joyous calls and cheer. Thriller Bark is a prison no more, a ship sailing on the despairing Florian seas no more. And as their captain slips away to slumber, the Straw Hat crew celebrate the return of their shadows, laughing and triumphant, and Luffy has the strangest dream. A bear plods through the ruins of Thriller Bark, body a hulking, thick-skinned contraption of cogs, screws, and steel. Clawless though they are, his paws can move mountains, scattering the brick, rubble, and even the air about him, about Luffy, lying there, and about the screaming Straw Hat crew. Defeat comes swift to the pirate crew. Thriller Bark and all their triumphs blast away. But the bear has eyes only for Luffy. The dreamer, of course. The dreamer of a dream that Kuma turns into a nightmare. "Monkey D. Luffy," the bear says in an oddly human tone, for a bear, peering down at the captain with small eyes of shadows. He stalks closer, clutching a gold-lined book to his chest, and hauls Luffy up, katana and all. And Luffy groans, struggling to discern whatever else the bear has to say. Lightning shrieks just a hair's breadth away. Hope rises up within the captain. His skin warms with the light, protected by the blazing ethereal glow. And he is safe here. They all are. Safe and sore and tired. Kuma raises a paw. And then a push. A shout, a promise ringing out, the call of starlight from so very far away. Luffy is the man who will become the Pirate King. A dream unbroken, a dream begun. And then Luffy wakes to devastation. Thriller Bark is ruination, less than rubble. Decimated, wrecked, peeling a bloodied skull and sweaty, battle-torn clothes from the rock, the captain hoists himself up with a surprising ease, rubber limbs springing bruised and battered but painless as he moves. Even nausea staves away, despite the gloopy spray of blood clotting in his hair. He must have hit his head once or twice, or three times perhaps, given his particularly good health. Regardless, Luffy isn't one to question a stroke of luck, so he sets his sights to his Nakama instead, spying the crew heaving themselves to awakening around him. Why were they all unconscious is beyond him. A unanimous need for a nap, maybe? But they're all here and complaining about it, groggy and disoriented, and Luffy beams. He reaches for his hat, reaches for Wado Ichimonji. Hair reunites with straw, and the blade is still at his side, exactly where he left it. Calling for Zoro is automatic. Waiting for a reply is no surprise. But when the spirit's silence lingers on for a moment too long, seconds now, a minute it may be, Luffy calls again and gives the grime-covered scabbard a shake. "Luffy!" "Sanji." The captain has vaulted to his feet before conscious thought can compel him. The sheer terror in the cook's voice. A sound like nothing he's ever heard. Luffy's heart hammers, pounding with the same fear that reverberates in his Nakama's tone. Luffy! Comes the bellow, agonizing, raw, and Luffy vows that whatever it is that has induced such fear in his gentle-hearted cook is going to be ended. Chopper, get over here! Luffy flies over the rubble, retracing the cook's hasty footsteps out of sight. Movement stumbles in his periphery, a flash of gold bobbing in a haphazard approach. Luffy whirls, skids, and crashes over a boulder in his haste to reach the cook. His elasticated body bounces unharmed against the ruin, hurling him upwards and onwards towards Luffy. Sanji wheezes, struggling beneath the dead weight of the man he's half carrying over the rubble. A head of meadow green hair is lulled against his shoulder. His own hair, daffodil blonde over a haunted expression, is dip-dyed crimson, and his face, neck, and chest are splattered in blood. Drenched with it. The man at his side seems little more than a gory bespattering of horror and agony. But the noise Luffy makes when he identifies the figure as his first mate echoes Sanji's terrible call. Luffy, help me! Sanji pants, the lifeless man falling, crumpling from the cook's grasp. Kneecaps shredding as he swoops down, Luffy flings himself beneath Zoro's corporeal form, desperately cradling the unconscious swordsman as they topple to the ground. Above him, Sanji roars for Chopper once again, the sound of footsteps thundering closer. But Luffy only has eyes for his first Nakama's shuddering breaths, his face blanched and sickly, the blood darkening his skin, his ridiculous green hair, sticky with sweat. He's wanted to see his first mate for so long, to see how big he smiles, how he laughs and grumbles, and if his mouth twists when he scowls. But not like this. Not like this could be the only time. When the others scramble over, Franky tries to pull him away. Chopper and Sanji fire information back at each other, their words escalating in gravity with every passing second. Gathered around them, the crew mutter and gasp in horror at the bloody scene. But Luffy thinks not of the gore as he clings to Zoro's shoulders and rubs a thumb to the swordsman's jaw. He'd rub the Wado Ichimonji for reassurance, but what good would it do now? It's Nami who eventually pulls Luffy away, her touch gentle on his shoulder as she coaxes him up. Chopper replaces him immediately, experienced gaze frantic as he catalogs Zoro's injuries. And Nami has hardly led the captain a few paces before the doctor has whisked the swordsman away. He'll be all right, she says, whispering into Luffy's ear as she holds him close, hugging him tight. Franky and Robin disappear with Chopper, but everyone else remains in the grisly aftermath. Brook stands shell-shocked, and Usopp offers Sanji an arm for support, which the cook curses at before resigning himself to the care. Luffy grips his navigator tight, smearing Zoro's blood across her shirt. She doesn't complain.
The mansion ruins provide a temporary refuge. Exhausted though they are, the crew oblige the doctor's every request by gathering supplies and equipment, running back and forth from the sunny with bandages, painkillers, and more. Chopper, eerily calm for one who frets and fusses through life, works restlessly to save the life of their Nakama, and sitting useless in the corner of their makeshift infirmary is all Luffy can do. Only those with strict permission are allowed into the room, an area cleared of rubble, slightly flatter than what remains of the entrance hall. And Luffy is deemed necessary only because he refuses to budge. Sanji, conversely, is thrown a cloth and told to clean himself up for a blood transfusion, but slumps as wearily as Luffy once the tube is slipped into his arm.
A sword spirit with blood loss is not something I imagined worrying about,
Chopper despairs, slicing away the tatters of Zoro's clothing. The swordsman is donned in a kimono, or what's left of one anyway, and Luffy would laugh at the spirit's traditional attire if Chopper were not cutting it to pieces. Imagining Gruff grumbling, "I dare you to fit another steak in your mouth," Zoro wearing something so elegant is laughable. But there's nothing amusing about the scene before him. "I wish I knew what blood type he was," Chopper continues, muttering to himself more than the crew around him. His concentration never wavers. Perhaps speaking helps him think, or maybe he hopes Zoro will answer. "I'll have to run some tests. Thank God for universal donors. Sanji, if you start feeling sick, please let me know." Sanji already looks sick, but he nods at the doctor's order, careful not to jog the tube. "I'll be fine. Take as much as he needs." Chopper's button blue nose wiggles as his face twists skeptically, but he says nothing more on the matter as he rummages through his kit in search of some miracle cure. He slaves for hours, stitching up almost every inch of Zoro's chest, dabbing up blood where he can, applying pressure where it hurts the least. Sanji is freed from the transfusion after a brief period, wobbles 2 feet, and promptly passes out. But Robin slips in to relieve Chopper of the pale-faced cook before the little doctor can work himself into a tizzy. Eventually, Chopper snaps off his gloves and lays down his equipment, cautiously checking his patient's heart rate and blood pressure once again. Satisfied, he slouches backwards with a heavy sigh. It's only an inch of movement, if even that, but his whole body seems to sag with the effort. Fur drooping, ears twitching down. Luffy's heart leaps into his throat as he edges closer, desperate to reassure himself of Zoro's condition. But Chopper manages a smile despite his crash from the adrenaline high. "He's not in immediate danger anymore," the doctor informs him, allowing Luffy's nervous approach. "I want to move him to the sunny as soon as possible. I'll be able to monitor him better there." Luffy seats himself beside the reindeer, taking in the grim sight of Zoro's motionless, tangible body. Bandages enwrap his torso, arms, stomach, and head, swaths of cloth as white as the Wado Ichimonji holding him together. The head injury is a concern, as the doctor declares with his hooves clacking together. "And it seems as though Zoro was thrown or pushed with some force," he explains, noting the abrasions on his arms and describing lacerations on his back. "They'll scar?" Luffy asks, eyes drifting to where the swordsman's hands are laid, noticing the cuts and scrapes that mark his skin from a lifetime long ago. "The lacerations might," Chopper says. "Some of them are quite deep. He must have skidded across the rubble. But that doesn't surprise me, with how strong that man had been." Luffy goes to ruffle the doctor's fur, but stops, hand hovering over Chopper's fluffy head. "That man?" "Oh, you didn't see him?" the other asks, leaning up just slightly to nudge the captain's head. Obliging, Luffy begins to stroke the thick strands of fur, and Chopper seems to forget himself for a moment, content to relax under the care. "See who?" Luffy asks, but Chopper replies only with a happy little sigh. "Our doctor refers to Bartholomew Kuma," Robin interrupts, coming to kneel on Zoro's other side. She brings news of the crew, no doubt, and they are all well despite their worry if the plate of bread and cheese she passes over is any indication. "He is a Shichibukai, a formidable opponent. He attacked us not long after Moria's defeat at your hands." "Our hands," Luffy wants to say, but his mouth is locked in a flabbergasted gape, mind a whirl of sensations and fragments of a memory. A man in spotted trousers and paws instead of hands. "What happened?" he asks. "He demanded your head. Pointlessly, of course."
the archaeologist replies, smiling an assassin's smile. Her protectiveness is a beautiful thing. She's come so far from her days of reign with the Baroque works. And Luffy's heart swells with pride as she recounts the crew's determination. He wished to cause us great harm, and we were weakened, easily defeated. I could only imagine that our swordsman here has a role in our present well-being. It is not in Zoro's nature to sit idle while his Nakama fight and bleed, Luffy knows. But the swordsman's corporeality and subsequent injury raises many a question as to how exactly Kuma's defeat came to be. Is Zoro more powerful than any of them had known? Or did something occur while the remaining Straw Hats lay unaware? "What'd he do?" Luffy asks, gaze steady on the wheezing rise and fall of the swordsman's chest. Chopper has done what he can for now, done everything in his power with the equipment available to him. And yet, Zoro's deathly pallor is still haunting to look at. And to think they had expected Zoro's corporeality to be something to celebrate. Robin merely inclines her head at the question, eyes softening as she gazes upon the unconscious man. "I can only speculate," she mutters, voice tinged a thoughtful blue. "Won't you eat, Captain? Our cook is adamant that we build up our strength even before dinner." Luffy frowns at the plate of cheese and snacks, but dutifully plops a chunk of cheddar into his mouth. Then he waves the plate under Chopper's blue nose, gently nudging the reindeer from his exhausted doze. "What? Oh, thank you," Chopper mumbles, rubbing at his eyes. "Oh, I should check Sanji. Where is he?" "He claims to be feeling better now," Robin explains, before the doctor can rush to locate the sickly cook. "Nausea while giving blood is not an uncommon reaction. Franky gave him a bottle of cola, and he seems to have perked up for the time being." There's no doubt that Chopper already knows all about the risks of blood transfusions, but the Zoan seems pacified by Robin's serenity all the same. "Is Franky around?" he asks instead, munching through a sandwich triangle. "I want to move Zoro to the Sunny."
"I can carry him,"
Luffy offers.
"I really need a stretcher,"
Chopper explains, ears twitching as the captain pouts.
"But thank you. I'm sure Zoro will appreciate it."
He sounds uncertain. Looks it, too, with his big, childlike eyes. And Robin laughs quietly, chuckling a soft noise of surprise.
"I'm sure our swordsman has come to appreciate many things throughout his time in this crew," she says, crow's feet wrinkles forming at her eyes. "But I don't think he'll say the same about being carried, do you?"
"But I carry the Wado Ichimonji all the time,"
Luffy argues, gesturing to the katana at his hip. He supposes he won't from now on, not now that Zoro can step into battle for himself. And that thought both thrills and saddens Luffy, so accustomed to the katana's weight as he is. "He'd never keep the Wado Ichimonji from Zoro, though."
"It's a little different, Captain,"
the archaeologist explains, smiling all the while.
"Many things will be different now, don't you think?"
She's right to ask with such a weighted tone. Of course she is. She's Robin, and many things will be changing now. But Chopper has shrunk into silence once again, small and glum at Luffy's side. And so the captain tries to smile.
"Franky'll have to make another bed?"
he replies, deliberately raising his intonation into a question. And this time his Nakama laugh.
"Luffy,"
Nami sighs, her call startling the slumbering captain into awakening. Unsympathetic though her voice may be, the sharp angles of her crossed arms and despairing frowns seem softer than usual.
"Come on, you can't sleep in here forever."
"It won't be forever," he argues, peeling a groggy post-nap head away from the infirmary bed. He hates napping, waking slurred and slumped and missing hours of possible adventure. But Zorro has been sleeping for so long now that just looking at the swordsman is making Luffy tired. And worried, but mostly tired. Tired of waiting, and tired of not knowing. He shoots the navigator a weary smile, hoping it will reassure her. Just until Zoro wakes up. Nami calls out his bullshit as usual, but with a notable absence of her fist striking his head. Chopper's already got enough to worry about with this idiot here, she says, tugging him from his slouch over Zoro's bedside. It's not fair to make him worry about you too, is it? She says, Chopper, but they both know she really means the crew. I just want him to wake up, Luffy mutters, allowing his second crew member to lead him through the kitchen and out onto the deck. She grabs a Tupperware box that someone has left on the bar counter as she goes, shoving it into the captain's hand. I know, Luffy, I know, she says, marching him and the box of pies to the Sunny's grassy deck. And he will. He always has, hasn't he? Luffy flops down onto the grass, spying Usopp and Brooke watching from the upper deck. The skeleton's presence on the ship is still a little queer. Brooke himself has a daily schedule entirely of his own, and though the crew surround him in their day-to-day lives, the musician seems to have trouble merging his life with theirs. Long, lonely years within the Florian Triangle would do that to any man, and Luffy aches to see his Nakama so lost amongst his home. Nami sits opposite, appearing to commit herself to watching the captain eat the entire box of pies. This won't be difficult. Luffy hadn't realized how hungry he is until he shoves the first pastry into his mouth. A second one rapidly follows, hardly chewed before the captain swallows it down. He pauses at the third, running his fingers along the plastic tub. But I have been calling him, he stresses, frowning at the remaining selection of pies. His crew are coping with the aftermath of Thriller Bark in their own way, but Luffy wonders if he's been coping at all. It's been days now. I want to ask him how he made himself all solid. He wants to ask Zoro if he's all right, really. But Luffy would be insulting his crew's intelligence if he thought they didn't already know that. The infirmary has scarcely been without the Straw Hat captain since embarking from Thriller Bark. Fishman Island is an adventure just waiting to begin. The island at the edge of the Red Line, the first stop into the legendary New World, and one of many towards Raftel and Gold. But Luffy wants Zoro to be there when they enter that treacherous sea. Half the world they've sailed with Zoro within the Wado Ichimonji. It's about time he felt the ocean romance, the wind, the waves, the sand between his toes, for himself. Robin's speculating that it might have something to do with Kuma's devil fruit, Nami supplies. Sanji-san did say that all Zoro needed was a, well, a push. We don't know what the limits of Kuma's ability are, and Chopper said that some of his injuries were probably acquired from being thrown. Luffy blinks, pork pie hovering mere centimeters from his mouth. Kuma's devil fruit ability sounds weird, but he's seen stranger things on the Grand Line for sure. He doesn't doubt Robin's theory for a second, but it doesn't explain how or why Zoro has come to be so terribly inflicted with wounds. Maybe that's something Luffy can only ask his first mate, if nobody else knows. Nami sighs, interpreting his stupor as a lack of understanding, and leans her face into her hand. Eat the damn pie, she says, and Luffy does, pausing only for a moment to wonder if Zoro would like one when he wakes. Waves roll beneath the Thousand Sunny. The free ocean air carries them along.
Beyond the murky Florian Triangle, the seas are clear and the horizons wide. And towards Fishman Island, the pirate crew sail smoothly. Zorro sleeps, heals, and sleeps some more. Bandages are changed, drugs are administered, and occasionally, briefly, his body seems to wake, a warrior's instincts causing him to twitch, tense, and flinch. But he doesn't open his eyes. Soon, the rest of the crew recover and return their eyes to the adventures beyond. Nami plots her maps, Usopp experiments in his lab, and even Frankie slaves away in the depths of his workshop, upgrading the Sunny to accommodate 9. Brooke gets a new bed, too, but he hardly seems to use it. Sometimes, when the night's watch is long and Luffy has grown weary with watching Zoro sleep himself to death, the captain flops out onto the deck and traces pictures in the stars. It is here that he can often find Brooke humming by the mainsail. His music is solitary and mellow, never once waking the crew. But his violin sings with such a lonely tune that Luffy is sure that Brooke could wake the dead if he wished, if he ever could bear to face the crew he's lost. Sometimes Luffy plods over to make his presence known. Brooke's songs are cheerier when he's there, when his captain is watching with eyes of starlight, a smile of gold. Sometimes he says nothing, but sometimes they talk, and sometimes Brooke is trapped within himself until Luffy takes the violin bow. The first time, Brooke continues to sing his lonely song for many hours more. The second, he seems surprised to find his bow vanished from his grasp, and then laughs a jolly melody when Luffy waves it under his nose. The third time, the skeleton merely stares at something beyond the captain's presence, beyond the Sunny even, beyond even the sky, and says, "How easy it would be to join the symphony of the night." That time, Luffy takes Brooke's icy hand and leads him into the infirmary, folds him into the only chair, and then assumes a guard at Zoro's bedside, where he can watch his swordsman and musician both. He can do little for the things that haunt his nakama in the night. "You should get some sleep, Luffy-san," Brooke says one night, drinking air from a teacup because he finished his tea long ago. Familiar with the captain and musician's nightly routine, Sanji left a teapot with them before turning into bed. But it's been hours now, and Brooke's drunk all of it, leaving him to tinker with the cup to occupy his hands. His violin is propped by the door, lovingly laid beside the Wado Ichimonji. The katana has not once left the infirmary since their departure from Thriller Bark, and neither has Zoro, much to the captain's despair. "I can keep you company," Luffy says, stifling a yawn. Sleep has not come easily over these past few days, and Nami and Usopp have been making their disapproval known. Worrying them is the last thing he wants, so he shuts himself in the infirmary and stays out of the way, unaware that it's this that is causing the most concern.
"Thank you, but truly, I think Zoro-san will be company enough," says Brooke.
Which is a weird thing to say, Luffy thinks, considering that the first mate is still unconscious. But maybe when you've drifted on the seas for half a century alone, the mere presence of another is a dream.
"A captain will need his sleep before we cross into the new world," the musician adds. "I can watch Zoro-san for a few hours, although I have no eyes to see."
Brooke laughs quietly, bones chinking together in the midnight calm.
"Skull joke,"
he whispers, muffling the sound behind the sleeve of his blazer. Luffy smiles with him, gratified by the ridiculous pun, but then submits to his nakama's request when Brooke ushers him from the room. Not 2 hours later, the skeleton comes tottering into the men's quarters and shakes both the captain and the doctor awake, sing-songing about Zoro waking up.
Luffy hurtles out of his hammock, scooping up the sleepy doctor as he bounds past. And by the time they've catapulted across the ship and bounded into the infirmary, Chopper is wide awake and squealing into the captain's ear. Zoro appears not to have moved since Luffy lugged himself into bed, but trusting in Brook's word, Luffy plops Chopper down and then bundles himself to the swordsman's bedside. "Zoro," he calls, reaching out. He lays a gentle hand on the first mate's chest, worried that even the slightest touch may harm. Brook ducks back into the room then, perching in the corner beside his violin and the Wado Ichimonji. And from the kitchen, Sanji emits a bellowing yawn before clattering around in the fridge. Chopper rushes to the bed, checking monitors for things that Luffy can only fathom, and seems pleased with whatever the numbers and squiggles tell him, if still a little worried. Zoro stirs. Two charcoal eyes blink open, brow heavy and shadowing above them, dragging the man's expression down. His lips grind together, dry against agony, thirst making him gasp, and his hands clench the bedsheet as reality writes itself around him. Luffy scoops up one of those hands, and Zoro rolls his head to the side, slurring something that might have been a name. Chopper dashes into motion immediately, checking heart rate, blood pressure, and more, and Zoro groans when the doctor slides a stethoscope over his chest. "Zoro's hurt real bad, but he's all right now," Luffy says, earning a small smile from the doctor and another slurred question from the swordsman. "Everyone else is fine, too. We left Thriller Bark days ago. You missed the party!"
"Sorry, Captain,"
Zoro murmurs, but he doesn't sound sorry. In fact, heartfelt beyond agony clogs his voice. Relief, it sounds. Gratitude. And his eyes are pleased, despite the sorry state that exhaustion has left him in. Dazed, pallid, and gray. Luffy grins wide and bright.
"We'll just have to have another one now that you're up." "Which you are not, by the way,"
Chopper interrupts, leveling both the captain and the first mate with a stern look. His gaze flicks between them, brows furrowing as though he cannot decide who deserves his ire more.
"If I see you take one step out of this bed before I give you the all clear, there will be consequences."
"The tally?"
Zoro asks, eyes crossing as he watches the reindeer's hoof waggle over his nose. Chopper's anger ebbs away at the pitiful whine, but he tries to maintain his superiority by puffing out his chest. He looks silly, and Luffy bites back a smile as the doctor adds,
"Don't think I've forgotten about that."
"Could never,"
Zoro slurs, and Chopper flusters, apparently interpreting that as a compliment. Luffy winks at the swordsman, and Zoro laughs, then coughs, spluttering saliva across the pillow, and wheezes a shuddering breath of pain. Chopper's ears droop, the excruciating sounds eradicating the lighthearted atmosphere, and even Luffy's smile dims as Zoro's coughing doesn't stop. Feverish flush burns across the first mate's nose, a bruising scarlet highlighting the shadows on his dark, sallow skin. The doctor lays a spring-smelling cloth across his chest, urging Zoro to take a deep breath if he can. A knock at the door and Sanji enters, his arms laden with a tray. Brook tucks his knees in to let the cook past, and Sanji beelines to the bed with an expression of grim determination, one that contrasts his slobby tracksuit trousers and rose-pink pajama shirt. Chopper takes the glass of water from him immediately, beckoning Zoro to drink. "Leek and potato," the cook says, placing the bowl of soup on the bedside surface. Zoro guzzles the water and then splutters, "Fuck," which is marginally better than his uncontrollable coughing, although Sanji doesn't seem to agree. "Unless you've got a problem with leek and potato, you're going to eat this," he warns, and not even Luffy would dare to argue with Sanji's angry, weary sigh.
dietary requirements, allergies. Zorro shakes his head, choppy hair plastered to his forehead with sweat, but then seems to recognize the cook's dog-eared countenance as something beyond this isolated exchange. He mumbles, "Meat." And the cook glowers. "I ain't giving you anything that heavy yet, idiot," Sanji snaps. But when Zoro shakes his head again, no, he too reconsiders what is being said. "Vegetarian?" he asks the swordsman, and Luffy's stomach twists in horror at the thought. Sanji too seems uncomfortable with the idea, if only due to the difficulty with such a restricted diet at sea. But then Zoro shakes his head, and one swirly eyebrow lifts in surprise. "Pescatarian, then. You eat fish?" Sanji guesses, sounding relieved. "Good. Sometimes there's nothing but fish to eat out here. Come on, sit up. You think you can hold this?" Zoro attempts a shrug as the cook offers the soup, and something seems to pass between the two in that moment. Understanding, maybe, or at the very least, a past experience shared. "Luffy-san," Brooke calls from the doorway, and Luffy whirls around, having almost forgotten the skeleton in his silence. "May I suggest returning to bed? I believe our swordsman is in capable hands here." Though reluctant, Luffy obliges to the request, letting his hand slip away from Zoro's. He budges out of the way to allow Chopper and Sanji to work their magic. The cook assumes Luffy's place immediately, gangly figures swamped by his choice of pajamas. And as Zoro grumbles a sleepy submission to the care, Luffy yawns, realizing just how tired he is. "Come now, Captain. Zoro-san will be all right," Brooke urges, laying a hand on Luffy's back. He ushers the captain from the infirmary, tinkering a joyful sound that follows them both to sleep, a wind chime warding the last of their worries away. Zoro sleeps for the rest of the day, rousing only at Sanji's insistence that he eat. The rest of the crew are informed of their first mate's developing recovery at breakfast, and thus take it upon themselves to visit the slumbering swordsman throughout the day. That he has woken without any permanent damage has lifted a weight from the sunny, and by the following morning, Zoro's request to leave the infirmary is met with laughter and incredulous sighs. "He bounces back faster than you, Straw Hat," Frankie comments, grinning lopsidedly as Zoro and Chopper's argument reverberates into the kitchen. The cyborg laughs at the captain's wide-eyed coup of, "Really?" and nudges the rubber man with one hefty elbow. "Aren't you supposed to reconcile intra-crew disputes?" Opposite him, Luffy slurps up a glass of chocolate milk and begins to fiddle with the straw. "Nami's better at it than me," he says, but he turns his head towards the infirmary door anyway, tuning into the conversation taking place. "But maybe if Zoro says he feels better, then he feels better?" Frankie shrugs. "You know him best," he says lightly. And Luffy blinks, still hearing the weight to such a claim. "I do? He's your first mate, ain't he, bro? What'd you think?" Luffy sucks up the last of his drink and then bounds into the infirmary to rescue his swordsman from Chopper's loving wrath. The doctor isn't pleased about being overruled by Luffy's dopey smile and grudgingly allows Zoro out of his immediate vicinity. His reluctance comes with a whole list of demands. "Don't do anything strenuous. Make sure you rest. Your injuries are still healing. Please take it easy." And both captain and first mate nod along like mischievous schoolboys, half listening to the rant. Chopper isn't blind enough not to notice. "You're a terrible influence on each other," he sighs, giving up. He transforms into Heavy Point, and for a split second it seems as though he intends to trap Zoro in the bed. But then he reaches for the swordsman and gently guides him onto his feet. "If you so much as sneeze," the reindeer warns, huge and menacing as he towers above them.
"I'll be sure to hide it from you,"
Zorro says, and his grin is promptly smothered by the doctor swooping down and glomping him with a hug.
I knew you were going to be a terrible patient,
Chopper wails, clinging to the swordsman so very carefully. He sniffs, burying his face in the humongous t-shirt that Frankie has lent their possessionless Nakama, and Zorro emits a peculiar sound, neither a squawk nor a hiss of pain, but something similar, soft and uninvited. What is it? Luffy asks, and Chopper does squawk, terrified that he's caused his patient pain.
It's nothing, Zorro insists,
but his voice is thick, clogged like when he first awoke, and Chopper frantically inspects his bandages for blood.
It's all right. I'm not hurt, Chopper, really.
Luffy is sure that it's a different kind of hurt, but he doesn't say anything. Rather, he waits until Zorro is released from the reindeer's fussing, and then latches onto his hand, fully intending to drag the swordsman into an exploration of the sunny. Only, Zorro doesn't budge, standing instead like an iron slab in the center of the infirmary. He breathes, "How?" with an expression of sheer incredulity, bafflement like Luffy has never seen before, and they stare at him.
"How what?"
Luffy asks, tugging Zoro's arm.
"Don't laugh," Zorro grumbles,
and Luffy cocks his head, utterly perplexed by the demand, until the swordsman adds,
"I think I've... fuck it."
He takes one determined stride in the captain's direction, before his knees cave beneath him. He flails, hops, spins, and crashes into the desk, practically tackling the chair beside it as he belly flops the floor. Chopper shrieks to the high heavens, and Luffy howls.
"My Frankie, his hair is almost as vibrant as yours in the sunlight,"
Robin observes, sipping the blueberry milkshake that the cyborg had brought out for her. How Frankie had persuaded Sanji not to offer the drink himself, unctuous flourish and all, is a mystery, but Robin seems unconcerned by this curiosity in the way she seldom is with the peculiarities of the world. Robin is correct. Zoro's hair is particularly green in the midday light, and Luffy and Frankie share a bout of laughter at the swordsman's expense. On the sunny's grassy deck, Zoro and Usopp are conversing boisterously, the sniper's body in animation as he shares some adventurous tale. There's no doubt that Zoro is listening attentively, but as the sunny sways and the clouds bob over them, the sky slipping in and out of shadow, he seems to turn towards the sunlight as it appears and basks momentarily in the amber warmth and glow.
"Maybe he does photosynthesize," Luffy says, squishing his rubbery cheeks into his hands. "That's where flowers eat light and stuff, right?"
"On some level, yes, Captain,"
Robin says, stirring the milkshake with one of the straws. The other, she gestures towards Frankie, and Luffy completely misses the cyborg's expression in favor of watching his first mate appreciate the afternoon sun. Zoro seems surprised every time the light hits his face. He was surprised, too, back when the crew involved him in conversation for the first time.
"So he's a sunflower," Nami calls from the upper deck, watering can dripping down the Adam's Wood walls. "Sanji-san was right after all."
"An apt description of our swordsman,"
Robin muses, eyes shining. Beside her, Frankie slurps the milkshake in noisy agreement. Luffy nods along, but he's not really listening anymore. As Zoro slowly heals, Chopper begins to make good use of his "hugs Zoro owes me when he's tangible" list. He's hesitant at first, as the first mate's recovery involves more sleep than anything else, but his desire to make up for lost time soon wins out. Considerately, he adopts his tiniest form when pouncing the swordsman. But this doesn't make it any less entertaining, as his big eyes bring Zoro to his knees.
I didn't realize I owed him so many, Zoro despairs one afternoon, hauling a towel up and out of the laundry basket.
Laundry is one of the less desirable chores on the Sunny, but he'll resign himself to any subservience, it seems, for a hug-free moment of peace. Brooke tinkers a laugh as he accepts the fuzzy towel, swiftly folding it into a perfect square. It's a skill neither Zoro nor Luffy have acquired, the latter of whom watches from his hammock, banned from sorting the washing after one mishap too many.
If I may be so bold, you don't seem to mind the hugs.
Brooke comments, accepting the first of Sanji's million shirts. Zoro throws another ball of socks into the steadily growing pile, embarrassment brightening his dark complexion. He doesn't say anything more for a moment, but then, eventually, he works up the courage to admit,
"He's just really soft."
Luffy coos despite himself, and Zoro grimaces, waving another sock ball at him threateningly.
"Yes," Brooke says with a melancholy chime, and Luffy stops laughing instantly.
Zoro, too, goes very still, but the musician seems apart from them in that moment, adrift as he is at night.
"I noticed the same thing," he says,
not that Luffy really understands. How could anybody not notice that Chopper is cute and soft and perfectly huggable? The skeleton smiles then, long fingers straightening the collar of Sanji's shirt.
"Although I have no eyes to see, yo-ho-ho-ho-ho!"
"Skull joke," Zoro mutters, laughing along. "But that wasn't a skull joke," Luffy says, perplexed but happy to hear them enjoying themselves. Their laughter doesn't cease, especially when Brooke discovers a bra that has found its way into the men's washing.
"Oh my, no!"
he giggles, hanging the underwear up on the end of Luffy's bunk.
"I suppose it wasn't, was it?"
Zoro and Brooke's friendship does not go unnoticed by the rest of the crew. Kindred spirits, Franky romanticizes, which is both a pun and surprisingly accurate, and poses the question as to the limitations of Zoro's new body. Robin muses that they can see a part of themselves in each other.
"They have both been alone for so long,"
she notes. And the others, too, reconsider Zoro's odd behavior. His gravitation towards the sun, pensive periods of silence, and the way he edges around the ship sometimes, as though expecting it to disappear in a new light.
"Do you think he's okay?"
Usopp mutters, the day that the first of Zoro's bandages come off, as rain and sleet hammer the Sunny from above, and the thick ocean currents wage war against the hull. The aquarium bar is peaceful despite the onslaught, and the sniper is using the miserable weather to take the chance to study their captured marine life. Luffy can't draw anything, so he loves watching his talented Nakama sketch, paint, and curse as he mixes his acrylics wrong. "Eh?" he asks, attention lifting from Usopp's sketchpad. He's sprawled out on the checked floor beside the sniper, kicking his legs in the air as he watches Usopp work his artistic magic.
"You mean Zoro?"
The sniper nods grimly, glancing at the captain before dipping the paintbrush back into the paint palette. He swipes the brush around vigorously, the fish in the tank above them disinterested with the enthusiasm. Luffy blinks, perplexed by the deep furrow of Usopp's brow.
"He's quiet, isn't he?"
Usopp asks, beginning to fiddle with the paintbrush. "And he doesn't really initiate conversations, does he? Like Brooke. Do you think he's... I mean, being corporeal must be a shock." "He's happier," Luffy says. He knows this to be true. There is no doubt that corporeality did come as a shock to the swordsman, but Zoro appears to be adapting well, finally able to interact bodily and whole with Nakama.
"Yeah, I know, but..."
Usopp deepens his frown, tapping the brush against his chin. Maybe I'm just thinking about it too much, but Sanji has to remind him to eat, you know? And I don't know, but Zoro seems to kind of forget that he's here sometimes. We're here, Luffy reassures him, understanding Usopp's concerns. Everything the sniper has said is true, but Luffy is confident that things will work out. They always have, and they always will, with a crew, a family like theirs. We can remind him, Zoro's not going to go anywhere. Well, he can't at the moment, can he? Usopp replies, gesturing vaguely to the ship, the sky, and the stormy seas. But yeah, you're right. He's not going to just disappear or anything. Why was I worrying? Usopp laughs as he lies, but it seems to reassure him. He nods and drops his attention back to the painting, absorbing himself in the work once again. Luffy smiles too, legs reassuming their lazy kicking. But Usopp's worries won't leave his mind. A seed of doubt has been planted, however unwittingly. And now it is all the captain can do not to rush off to locate their wayward swordsman. He sighs, squishes his cheek into a hand, and fixes a stare on Usopp's sketchpad until the feeling of uncertainty passes. Usopp pops open another tube of acrylic. With a critical eye, he considers his next brush stroke and twiddles the brush between his fingers. To the painting, he says, "Just go and talk to him, yeah?" But it is Luffy who answers, scrambling to his feet and darting out the door. Rain hammers down, soaking the captain as he springs across the deck. The crow's nest would be the first place to look for Zoro if he wasn't severely wounded. The rope ladder wasn't designed with traumatic injuries in mind, so Luffy scampers into the men's quarters instead. It seems empty at first glance, but then he spies a pair of feet hanging over one of the sofa's arms. It's Zoro, sprawled over the cushions and snoozing gently, arms folded behind his head. Padding over with his flip-flops squelching all the while, Luffy considers how best to rouse the slumbering swordsman without further aggravating his wounds. Some of his bandages have been removed, and now Luffy can see part of a jagged, stitch-torn scar across his chest, the skin around it pulled taut and twisted into shape. It's a sloppy example of Chopper's usual skill, if it is the Zoan's handiwork, and Luffy pouts, edging closer. What? Zoro says, dark eyes peeking open. His gold earrings chime as he tilts his head, appraising the captain's resolute look. Did Kuma give Zoro that scar? Huh? Oh, Zoro says, ghosting his fingers down the scar in question, a grotesque remnant of a wound that must have nearly carved him in two. His hand hesitates at his ribcage, fingertips light over the dark tissue, and his gaze seems to drift far away. No, he says eventually, face twisting in something that Luffy hesitates to label as anger. He didn't. The captain frowns and reaches out, laying his hand just beside Zoro's. The swordsman twitches beneath his touch, hand jerking away from the scar. But Luffy stays put as he retraces along the edge of the wound. It must have nearly killed him. Maybe it did. Do you remember what happened? Zoro grimaces, but it is not Luffy's caress that is causing him pain. Not really. It was a long time ago. He's dead now anyway. It doesn't matter anymore. No, it does matter. Did you achieve your dream before? Luffy shakes his head to rid himself of that horrible thought, frown darkening into a scowl. Before this? Or did he take that away from you? Hearing the ferocity in Luffy's voice and recognizing this as a serious matter, Zoro props himself up, a twitch of his lips the sole indication of any pain. Luffy's hand stays where it is,
clenching as though daring Zoro to move it. But the first mate allows the contact, encourages it even, as he tugs Luffy into sitting opposite. Zoro had a dream, right? The captain presses, and Zoro huffs, watching Luffy's fingertips trail along the scar. Was it something to do with that guy with a feather hat and the big sword?
It was a long time ago, Captain,
is the reply, which is just as much a no as it is a yes.
We weren't at the Barati that long ago.
Charcoal eyes roll. You're not getting it, they seem to say. No, before that. But it was his title I was interested in anyway.
Was. What about is? What about will be?
Luffy pulls away, rocking back on his knees. Straw scratches the back of his neck, adding to the little bump of scars already there. But he doesn't feel the pain from such a familiar and loved movement anymore. The hat is his dream, his hopes and desires all weaved and tied together. And he'll have to return it to its rightful owner once it bears the weight of that dream no more. But what has Zoro's dream left him with? Motivation? Dedication? Or just a scar on the outside and 100 wounds within? How can Luffy change that?
Then Zoro didn't fulfill his dream?
He asks, hoping that he's wrong, but knowing that he's right. Brook lingers on to see Laboon again, to fulfill his promise from many years ago. So the force that tied Zoro to the Wado Ichimonji must be one of the same. Zoro inhales sharply, eyes rising to mirror the captain's stern look.
What do you want me to say? No? That I failed? That I wasn't good enough?
Yes, Luffy breathes, choppy hair bouncing as he nods his head.
Surprise flashes across the other's face, as brief and sharp as the Wado Ichimonji's sparks,
and Luffy softens his expression. Because Zoro's here now, right? He can still do whatever it is he wants to do, because it's still important to him. And we'll help him, because we're Nakama, because his dream is just as important as everyone else's. Right? Says the tilt of his head, the sway of the straw hat across his shoulders. And Zoro looks at him with the most peculiar expression, all fond and warm and yearning to be understood, and says,
No, Luffy, it's that dream. It's not important anymore. I was selfish and young and proud. But I've been in the Wado Ichimonji for long enough to know that there are more important things to fight for.
Like what? Luffy interrupts. And not, in fact, arguing the matter, because he's been longing to understand what motivates his first mate for so long now. And if that's not what it was when they first met, then how has it come to change? Only, Zoro shakes his head.
I have a better dream now,
is all he says. But he means it in earnest, and thoughts of his dream, whatever it is, coax a smile onto his face, softening his expression into something more like something that yearns to be kissed. And Luffy believes him. They don't kiss, but the tide pulls them in anyway. As the Sunny bobs on, routine finally finds its way into her crew's lives. Mealtimes are more rowdy than ever. 9 pirates squeezed around a table for 8.
I'll have to make a bigger one,
Frankie comments, rubbing his pointed chin after Nami gets elbowed for a 5th time and wallops the captain again. Few places are quiet on the Thousand Sunny, large though she is, but a ship full of life never fails to put a smile on Luffy's face. Now that Thriller Bark is long behind them, his Nakama can rest, heal, and look forward to the dreams they have ahead. All of them can. Kami still surprises them right out of the blue. She thanks them profoundly for saving her life, the Sea King that had swallowed her darting away after Luffy's tremendous punch.
Oi! Sanji!
The captain roars, arms flailing over the side of the Sunny. Dinner's getting away! But the chef is hardly listening, with how the young mermaid is blubbering gratitude at him. The Sea King's saliva that she's covered in, failing to detract from her bubbly, bright-eyed attractiveness. Her hair's almost as green as yours, Zorro, Usopp mutters, making a thoughtful noise as he compares the two hues. Maybe it's a mermaid thing? Sanji can hardly tear his eyes away from Kami, but he takes a moment to smirk in Zoro's direction. So he's not moss, he's seaweed. I don't see you mocking her for it, the swordsman grumbles, crossing his arms over his chest. Menacing doesn't quite describe his expression. Zoro would say pouting more than anything else, shooting the sniper and cook a thumbs up, even as Zoro begins to growl. That's because Kami-chan isn't some barbaric meat lug, Sanji says, practically swooning with delight as Kami and Nami begin to chat. Unlike you, she's cute. Zoro's ears go really red when he's embarrassed, Luffy counters, and the subsequent slap is the first mate face-palming and hiding his face in horror. See? Luffy says. Robin is the only one who refrains from goggling at Zoro. Oh my, she says instead, smiling behind her hand. And judging by Zoro's deepening embarrassment, her amusement feels no different from the stares. Once Chopper is assured that Kami isn't suffering from any ill effects of nearly being digested, and Luffy is pacified by promises of takoyaki, the Straw Hat Pirates welcome their temporary guest. What a cheerful young lady, Brooke says, laughing along as Kami introduces herself to the crew. Kami is, indeed, a rather merry, accident-prone mermaid, and when Robin notes that she may be able to guide them to Fishman Island, Kami is happy to show them the way. I'll have to call Hachan and let him know that I'm okay, she says, completely unfazed about her near-death experience within the bowels of a sea king. Chatting all the while about Hachan and takoyaki, the mermaid accepts a denden mushi from Nami and gleefully begins to dial. Her face falls as the line connects, and with it, the Straw Hat Pirate's spirits plummet. All except the captain's, that is. Oh, dear, Brooke says, sounding far less worried than he should, as Luffy dances around the deck, chanting, Adventure! Adventure! I suppose this means we have plenty to look forward to. Usopp whines a pitiful sound that only seems to amuse the skeleton even more. As long as it's not as bad as Thriller Bark, the sniper bemoans, raven curls of hair bobbing as he shakes his head from side to side. Despite his crewmate's gloom, Luffy doesn't pause in his cheer. I thought Thriller Bark was great! You would, Nami despairs. Why can't we have a happy adventure for once? In spite of her misgrievances, Nami alters their course without further ado. Sabaody Archipelago is an island they hadn't originally planned to visit, but if it means ensuring that Kami and her friends are safely returned to Fishman Island, then it's a detour they can afford. Luffy is going to be king of the seas no matter how long it takes, so what's one more island on the journey to Raftel? If you're sure, is all Nami says, and instead of calling him captain as most would, she thwacks him over the head with a map. He whines in good nature, clutching the choppy strands of his hair, and the navigator's unsympathetic expression only deepens. Now get out and let me chart our course in peace. Luffy goes merrily, almost tripping over their scampering doctor, as he springs down from the library. Chopper squeals as the captain tumbles over him, but unharmed, he calls after Luffy as the rubber man bounces down the hall. Luffy! Luffy! This was still in the infirmary and I kept knocking it over, so... His hat tilting as he addresses the taller devil fruit user, Chopper holds out the Wado Ichimonji, as he has done a dozen times before.
the white sheath oversized but securely held between his little hooves. Luffy stares, thinking it strange, all of a sudden, that Zoro no longer resides within the sword, and yet the treasured blade is still within Chopper's possession. "It's Zoro's sword," he says. "Why's Zoro not got it?" he wonders, belatedly wincing at his tone as Chopper jerks in surprise. The Zoan frowns down at the blade, perhaps pondering the question himself, and Luffy rushes to thank the doctor and put a smile back onto his face. Luffy accepts the Wado Ichimonji and Chopper's flustered profanity, but as he holds the katana, as he has for all these previous months, he cannot bring himself to slip it into his belt at his side. "Sorry for messing up your infirmary," Luffy says, bopping Chopper's turquoise nose before dashing off to locate their swordless swordsman. He is in the crow's nest this time, which is probably the only reason that Chopper didn't manage to find him. If the doctor could see the weights that Zoro is lifting, he would definitely have a few things to say. Frankie will be glad to see his hard work is being appreciated at any least. Although, the way Zoro's face twists as he hauls up the weights seems more like frustration than any goodwill. The captain bounces over, waving the katana over his head. At the beckoning, Zoro pauses in his exercise, face a bright scarlet with sweat, but the most untroubled that Luffy has seen it in days. But it pales into gray when he notices what it is that Luffy holds in his hands. Hey, Zoro, don't you want this? It's Zoro's sword, isn't it?" Luffy doesn't wait for a response before he shoves the katana into the hands of its rightful wielder. One of the dumbbells clanks as it hits the floor, dropped in the first mate's haste not to do the same to the blade, and Luffy hops over the dumbbell as he dances around Zoro and his deer-like expression of stupor. The Wado Ichimonji flickers a brilliant blue in Zoro's grasp, the iridescent light catching the tinge of sorrow in his eyes. Grief, Luffy remembers, thinking back to the swordsman's shadow at Thriller Bark. "Yeah," Zoro says, the moment passing. Luffy doesn't doubt for a second that he saw it, but he doesn't press the issue. As long as Zoro is happy to be on his crew, happy with his dream, and happy to sail all the way to One Piece and on, then Luffy is happy too. "Zoro's happy to be my swordsman, isn't he?" the captain asks, rocking back on the balls of his feet, hands stuffed into the pockets of his shorts. He's at ease, and he wants Zoro to be at ease too. Plus, having another swordsman on his ship is going to be great! "Yeah," Zoro says, more confidently this time. He drums his fingers along Wado Ichimonji's hilt, as Luffy used to do, then raises a cocksure eyebrow, as his mouth quirks upwards in reflection of a conversation many weeks ago. "Sorry, Captain. I guess I must have forgotten to pick it up. Won't happen again." "Good thing none of us want to leave then, isn't it?" Luffy beams brilliantly, and the tips of Zoro's ears tinge a little red. "Good," he replies, laughing his signature laugh. "I think you owe Chopper another hug now." "Oh, yeah?" Zoro challenges, picking up the dropped dumbbell before Luffy trips over it with all his bouncing around. His brash confidence increases as he tilts up his head, practically daring the captain.
"Shouldn't I be owing you this hug?"
He says it without any hint that it may be something he wants, but Luffy knows better now. "Zoro can have a hug if he wants."
"Or no, I didn't."
Realization dawns on Zoro's face the second before Luffy pounces, but instead of fleeing like the captain half expects, he tosses the dumbbell aside to make way for the bounding, unstoppable man. Luffy sweeps him off his feet, and Zoro... well, Zoro makes that weird, happy surprise noise he can't seem to help whenever Chopper seeks him out for comfort, and Luffy's laughter bellows around the crow's nest. There's definitely a protest somewhere within the swordsman squawking, but as he whirls around the gym, hoisted half over one of Luffy's shoulders, he starts to laugh as well,
Great rumbling rolls of it, like thunder in the captain's ear. Ah, Zoro was so much lighter in Wado Ichimonji. Does that mean he's made of bones and stuff? Luffy says, hulling the age-old spirit further over his shoulder. He wiggles about until Zoro is securely laid across him in a fireman's lift, the comfort of which is debatable. Zoro's affronted expression and choppy spring green hair just visible in the corner of his eye. Luffy snickers. You're blushing! Must be human! What sort of logic is that? Put me down! How about no? Zoro huffs, scrunching up Luffy's waistcoat in his fist. He doesn't go as far as to offer the sniggering captain a sharp kick, although this may be due to Luffy's elasticated ribcage rather than any real hesitation. How about yes? Luffy pretends to think about it for a moment, pouting lip and all. Nah, he says, bounding around to inspect the dumbbells and weights. His coups of intrigue are appropriately timed to muffle Zoro's complaints, and Luffy's wicked smile only grows as the tension eases from the swordsman's shoulders, his body sagging with defeat. I think I'm squashing your hat. That does induce a moment's pause, but not one long enough to reconsider letting his first mate go. Don't worry, Zoro's not gonna hurt it. I didn't say hurt. Same thing. What is it with you and putting words into my mouth? As far as Luffy's aware, there isn't anything worth mentioning about putting words into Zoro's mouth. And he shoots the other a bemused expression as he explains. Zoro doesn't want to squish my hat because he knows it's really important to me. And he knows I'll be hurt if anything happens to my hat, like how he'll be hurt if anything happens to Wado Ichimonji. Although, I guess you were inside of it, and my hat's not big enough to get inside of. And since he doesn't want to hurt me, he's worried about hurting my hat. See? Same thing. Except Zoro's not going to hurt my hat because he's Zoro. And Zoro laughs. Oh, God, he wheezes, golden earrings tinkling as he ducks his head away from Luffy's gaze. It must be to hide his embarrassment. Which is really silly, because Luffy can still see the blush burning down his neck. I've chosen to follow a moron. Hey! I'll throw you overboard! Yeah, you've made that threat before. I mean it this time! Luffy insists, hauling the swordsman over to the window. His strides long and determined to make his point. Last time, Zoro had been trapped within Wado Ichimonji, and thus incapable of swimming. But now Luffy won't feel any guilt when he tosses the X spirit off the deck. All right, sheesh, Zoro yelps, breathless with laughter. Sheesh, oh my God, you don't even know if I can swim. Put me down, idiot. As inconspicuous as an elephant in the room, Luffy relatches the window shut. Do I get anything for it? Christ, you turning into Nami now? The other pants, fixing the captain with an unimpressed glare. Dutifully, Luffy kneels down and rearranges Zoro back onto his feet, offering the disgruntled swordsman a cheeky smile. All right, you ever heard of Centoryu? Luffy shakes his head, patting the man down for good measure. Hurting Zoro is the last thing he wanted, and he supposes, with the remnants of Thriller Bark still healing beneath Chopper's most recent layer of bandages, he should have taken care before lugging Zoro around. What's Centoryu? It's stop patting me. If you want a hug, I'd rather you ask. Scarred hands batting the captains away, Zoro yanks Luffy forward and into a hug. They both oof as their chests thump together. Zoro's hands hover for a moment, but then resolution urges them to enwrap the captain in a slightly awkward, rather warm, and surprisingly affectionate embrace. I wasn't trying to hug Zoro, Luffy admits, snickers stifled by Zoro's shirt. Despite the miscommunication, he accepts the hug anyway, winding his elasticated arms thrice around his first mate, lest Zoro have any stupid ideas like trying to get away. You sneaky little...
Tell me about Centoryu, Luffy says, batting innocent eyes. On fire is a description more befitting of Zoro's face than the previous blush that had stained his cheeks. And the captain feels quite proud of himself for reducing Zoro to such discomposure. Sanji had no idea what he was going on about when he said Zoro wasn't cute. The first mate's chin clunks against the top of Luffy's head, and though he cannot see it, Zoro presses a smile, a kiss, into the bird's nest of Luffy's hair. Ugh, whatever. It's something you'll like, I promise. Zoro is right. Luffy is ecstatic to discover. Once he releases the swordsman, for long enough for him to demonstrate the full range of his abilities at any rate, Centoryu is pretty goddamn awesome after all. The end. The music used in this podfic is Hope by Namie Amuro. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening. Reader's note. I'm at the part where Luffy has Zoro's shadow in him and he's about to draw Wado Ichimonji and he talks about how he wields the sword like a stick. And just current One Piece, Luffy currently has a really, like, one of the best swords available around. Like, one of the top 21 or whatever it is. Like, a really fancy sword. He's currently refusing to give it to Zoro and holding onto it because it's part of his samurai disguise, and he doesn't even wield it like a stick. He just holds it and punches people. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. So, now I'm just assuming that is how Luffy treats the Wado Ichimonji, right now. Yes.